Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome to the Lorehounds Podcast, where the Lorehounds, your guides to a galaxy far, far away. I'm John.
And I'm Marilyn. And this is our coverage of the new Star Wars Disney Plus show, Skeleton Crew, episodes 1-4.
If you're enjoying what we do and are interested in supporting the Lorehounds community, check us out on Supercast or Patreon. If you're not interested in a subscription, however, you can still help us out by giving us a rating and especially a review on Apple Podcasts. I find, Marilyn, if I don't ask people to do it, only the mean people write reviews.
I know. It's so
I have to ask the nice people to do it. So please, nice people. Only the nice
people. Yes.
People write us a review.
Absolutely. I'm sure we have majority nice people.
Of course.
All nice people listening to us. So. Yes. And we love to hear from people who listen to us. And you can do that by email if you want to starwars@thelorehounds.com. Or you can head to our website to send in all your theories about Atten before we come back after the series finale.
Also, join us on the Discord. We've got a fun and active community, a great mod team, channels and threads set up for all the different shows and projects we've got going on. You can get links to everything that we do, including the Discord and the website and everything, in the show notes, in the link tree. So, Marilyn, I just want to say up front, my voice is a little deeper and a little grainier than usual. I'm still kind of getting over a sickness a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, nothing wrong with being deeper and a little grainier.
Yeah, I'm trying to go for a Johnny Cash vibe if I can. Yeah, so there was a time that I was so sick last week that my voice sounded very James Earl Jones, so I did my best Vader impression for David and Alicia.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Oh, that's perfect!
And so my voice was just like 3 octaves deeper than usual, and that helped. So I'm going to save that for all our favorite Star Wars pods.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Got to be there somewhere.
Marilyn, it's been a while since we recorded something, though. I think pretty shortly after this, there's going to be a Silmarillion story dropping, and everything's out of order because that's the magic of podcasting. But
absolutely.
It's been a while, especially since we talked about Star Wars together. I think since The Acolyte.
Yeah. Acolyte was the last time. That's what I remembered. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't even remember how long ago that was, but
we've been on a break of Star Wars stuff for a while. We haven't really gotten anything until now.
Right. But, you know, it's not like we've been sitting around twiddling our thumbs.
I know. Well, yeah, we've got plenty of other worlds to explore, but it's really fun to be back in this galaxy far, far away. So I want to bring us right in before we go to hot takes and just give some details, production details on this.
Sure. Sounds good.
So we're here to talk about, for the first time, even though we're halfway through the season, we were going to come after episodes 1 and 2. I got sick. My kids got sick. Whole thing. But we're here midway through the season, and I think that's a good stopping point anyway.
Yeah. No, I think it works well. The episodes are only half an hour long each. So
right. Exactly. We basically just watched the first movie out of two.
That's just what I was thinking.
Yep. So the logline plot synopsis of this, everything's going to be spoiler-free until we take a break.
Mm-hmm.
The logline plot synopsis is, it's the Goonies in space. A group of kids on the secluded planet of Atten find a starship and accidentally jump into hyperspace, leading them on a wacky adventure with pirates, mystery, and Jude Law.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of nice voices.
Yeah, right? He's got a great voice. Are you a Jude Law like fan? Like, have you come across him before?
Well, the first time I encountered him was Captain Marvel.
Oh, he was in that, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he was like the main lead, the main male lead, and I liked him a lot, even though he was not a likable character in the end. But he really left an impression on me. So I can't remember between then and now what other things I've seen him in, but I recognized his voice from the very first moment when we don't know who or what this person is.
Yeah, he's got a great voice, really, really warm demeanor. And so the role they have him in, this is very interesting. We'll get into that once we get into spoilers.
Yes.
He's had quite the career the last few years. He was Dumbledore in the Harry Potter prequel.
That's right. That was the other one.
He was the young Pope and the new Pope in The Young Pope by HBO. Very good show, by the way. Very different vibe. Not kid appropriate like this show is.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, he's just been in a ton of really good stuff. He was in the Grand Budapest Hotel. That's one of the first times I saw him.
He plays
the younger author as he's narrating his life, basically.
Hmm.
And yeah, just very good overall actor. I want him to read me all the things.
Yes. Even the phone book.
Yes.
Well, maybe not the phone book, but anything else.
I'd have him read the phone book so I go to sleep.
There you go. You know? There you go. You know? It would be so comforting.
Yep. Production details, the showrunners are John Watts and Christopher Ford, and it's starring Jude Law as Silvo / Jodna Nawood. I think he's Silvo firmly now, right? Are we calling him Silvo now?
I think so. That seems to be what they want us to think anyway. So.
Okay. Ravi Cabot Conyers, apologies for pronunciation, as Wim. Ryan Kira Armstrong as Fern. Kiriana Crater as KB. Robert Timothy Smith as the voice of Neil, and Nick Frost as SM33. Now, Marilyn, you had a point on the music.
Yes. I noticed that the credit music is also very much like the vibe from the Pirates of the Caribbean music.
Okay.
And the composer is Mick Giacchino. Who is the son of Michael Giacchino, who scored Rogue One.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's interesting.
So there's a father-son Star Wars connection there.
Keeping it in the family. And, of course, the son gets to do the kids show, so that's very appropriate.
There you go. He's also previously done The Penguin and That Dirty Black Bag, which I don't know at all. And I think he struck a really nice note, because I'm finding the music much more like Peter Pan or E.T., which is very appropriate for the ages of the heroes and the focus of the overall work, which is lost children getting home.
Yeah.
And I'm liking it very much. I also like the introductory music, which sounds like, you know, once upon a time, a long time ago. So and at first you think, is this really Star Wars? But don't worry, folks, it really is.
Yeah. I had the same thought, Marilyn. In the first few scenes, I was like, oh, I don't know. Are we doing something different here? But
well,
it does come around.
In particular, you know, Star Wars in suburban Pacific Northwest. I thought, but we don't stay there long, so it's fine.
Right, exactly. So it's on Disney Plus, as all other Star Wars shows are. And there's going to be 8 episodes. The last episode premiering on January 14th, 2025. So just before Severance, we're going to come back and we're going to see what's going on. See what's going on with Ad Haddon.
There you go.
Let's do our spoiler-free hot takes. Marilyn, start us off. What are you thinking about this show? Are you a Goonies fan? Is this Goonies to you?
I will confess, I have never seen Goonies. I don't know really? What it is. I have no clue. So I
it's
will rely
such
upon
a cult
you for
classic
that.
Now.
Well, there you go. I'm sure there are many cult classics strewn throughout the back of my life that I have never seen, and who knows if I'll ever catch up with them or not, because they keep coming out with new stuff.
I mean, I grew up watching that movie all the time. It's an 80s movie, you know. Kids get on a wild adventure, get over their heads, they befriend weirdo adults, and it's very similar in vibe. That's why I'm saying,
yeah, no, I can see that. But you see, in the 80s I was starting off my first really significant job, so in fact that was when I was starting my job at Colby, so
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, you got to go back. I think you should watch the Goonies before the end of the season. I think you'd have a good time comparing it.
Well, I'll see what I can do. Is it a one-shot film?
Yeah, just a movie. Yeah. Just a standalone movie.
Well, you know, my partner may have seen it, so we'll see.
There you go.
Call it up somewhere.
So what did you think? Goonies aside, what did you think of the show?
Well, it's clearly set for a younger audience, and I'm almost thinking 7 to 10-year-olds. Though, I don't know, maybe even younger. I'm not really all that great on the age limits and what ages kids are taking in what material lately. And of course, it varies from kid to kid anyway.
Right.
There are a ton of Easter eggs, both from Star Wars and from Pirates of the Caribbean, which I find really interesting. So there is clearly a piratical theme. Arr, mighty.
Yep.
And one thing in particular reminded me that they're using the same techniques that were used by pirates back in the 1600s. So, you know, some things just don't change. We'll talk about it more when we get to the episodes. And as I mentioned, the opening music sounds very much Once Upon a Time. And I think Hans Zimmer was definitely an inspiration for a lot of music throughout and for the credits. There's a couple mysteries that follow along from episode to episode with clues along the way for viewers to contemplate. So that's fun. You know, every episode we get a little more information, think, oh, well, maybe that means da 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 da.
Yeah.
And they involve, you know, the background of characters and, you know, the history of planets and just a whole lot of interesting stuff. So I think it's very well crafted, well designed, and just a really fun, light romp. And it is still Star Wars, so it's good. What about you, John?
Yeah, it is. You alluded to it, like at first, you are very concerned that this is something that's like a little bit corporatized, I would say. It was like too clean and whatnot.
Huh.
It's like, this isn't Star Wars. And then by the end of the first episode, you go, oh, no, this is Star Wars. This is just kids going on an adventure and getting in over their heads. Yeah. And it really just is the Goonies in space. And that's exactly what I wanted out of this show.
Mm-hmm.
It should be fun. It should feel like we are just part of the team. Just
right.
Get, you know, going out there, having an adventure. I really like how they have these kids, because this is so true of kids, right? Kids want to be independent. Tonight, my daughter wanted a banana. And I started peeling it for her automatically. And she goes, no, let me do it.
Yep.
And I was like, yeah, forgot. You're trying to be independent now.
Yep.
And it's just so true that, like, and my daughter's 4, by the way, if you're a new listener. It's so true that kids just want to be independent and they want to feel like a grown up. And you see that so much with these kids. And you also see the other side, which is they realize that they're not grown ups and they are in over their heads.
Yes.
And that's, it's such a hard balance to strike and feel authentic, and they're really doing it here. Like, I feel like these feel like real kids to me.
Yeah, that I can think of one character at one point where there seems to be kind of an abrupt shift, and yet, if you think of all the cumulative stuff that's happened to them,
right?
You can say, okay, yeah, that does make sense. Because, yes, they want to be adults until they don't.
Right.
And I find one part of it interesting where, well, maybe I guess we'll save that for when we go through the episodes.
Yeah.
So not.
I know what you're talking about too. I'm pretty sure I know what you mean with the abrupt shift.
Yeah, but even before that, there was something else. But doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah, and overall, I just think, you know, it's really fun to see. You know, we've alluded to there are pirates in this. I think pirates are some of the most fun, like, animated aspects of Star Wars. You know, we get them in the Clone Wars and Rebel
Wakanda. Yes.
We get the Mandalorian has some pirate aspects. I don't think we've seen as much pirate culture as we ever have here. This is like a lot of pirate stuff, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, they're exploring, you know, pockets of the universe at certain points along the timeline that we're familiar with that we've just not been to.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my surprise about, you know, suburban Pacific Northwest suddenly appearing, it, you know, why should that be a surprise? Well, it's just because we've never seen anything like that in any other Star Wars because it wasn't appropriate. So.
Right. And I think the pristineness of that will eventually be explained. We are in for a really fun mystery box. If they can pull together the mystery well, the show will be a success. That will make or break this show.
Yeah, I think you're right. Although, you know, I've already seen enough, you know, fun moments that I'm, you know, perfectly content with us.
Yeah.
Certain characters.
It will be a fun show no matter what.
Right.
I think the question is, will it be a good show?
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Yeah, some characters who I don't even know, but, you know, on the Discord channel, which, by the way, listeners, if you don't know about this, be sure to pop in, because the discussion just goes on, and I learn all kinds of things there, that some of the characters that are cropping up are familiar Star Wars canon characters, or maybe not canon, but anyway. And for me, most of them are just, oh, I like that, but I've not seen it before, so.
Mm. Yeah, well, after the break, Alicia has a couple voicemails for us about Easter eggs.
Ah, well, we'll see if we have the same list.
There you go. There you go. Well, any other thoughts about this? I guess, who would you pitch this show to? If you're just a casual Star Wars fan, is this something for you?
Oh, I think so. I think so.
And if you're a deep fan, is this for you?
Yeah. As I say, when I first, you know, the first part of the first episode, I'm thinking, wow, okay, well, but they just get right into it. The same kind of rush in a way that you see in 18-year-old Luke, you know, which, I mean, if you haven't watched the first Star Wars trilogy of films, I'm sorry, you're just going to get spoiled.
They've been around a very long time. We're spoiler-free for this show, but other Star Wars stuff, yeah.
It's all fair game. So it's that same kind of energy, but, you know, with much younger protagonists. And in their case, you know, they think they really want adventure, and then they get it.
Right, exactly.
And then helps them figure out, well, what do I really want? It's maybe not what I thought it was.
We shall see by the end whether they really gained anything.
Yeah. Probably more knowledge of their world, I'm hoping, as you said.
I was just trying to bring in Tolkien as best I could. As best I could remember. So let's take our break in a moment. But everyone, it's such a fun show. I think everyone should go check this out. If you've not, go binge it. It'll take you 2 hours to watch everything up till now.
Yeah.
And come back, enjoy the spoilery conversation. But for now, we'll see you after the break.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back. So we've got some more Star Wars to talk about. Now we will be full spoilers on the first 4 episodes of Skeleton Crew.
Woohoo!
Marilyn, I think we have to just go through the different arcs. I have them split up into 3 arcs.
Mm-hmm.
There's 4 episodes, but the first one and the second one kind of go together.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or the second and third one, actually, I lumped together. So I have 3 main plots. I have the setup, finding friends, and the friends we made along the way.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is the setup. After Wim misses the bus to the test that will determine his life's trajectory, he finds what he believes to be an abandoned Jedi temple. His friend Neil and his nemesis, Fern and KB, help him sneak into the object, where they discover it was a starship and accidentally jumped to hyperspeed. Marilyn, what did you think of this opening before I go to Alicia's voicemail?
It was very classic Star Wars. I mean, the opening shot itself, where you're looking out in a space full of stars, and then you get a camera pulled down, and there's a planet over here. And I mean, so many opening of Star Wars films that reminds me of.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get right into the whole piratical things. And I guess there have been other instances of ships overtaking other ships, but my first thought was, oh my gosh, even now, they're still using grappling hooks. <You know? laughs> Took me right back to, as I say, Pirates of the Caribbean and all the different shenanigans that were going on. So that setup so soon, really great. And one of the first lines from the captain, who we don't know yet who it is, "If this is a cargo vault, why does it have a magnetic seal?" And of course, I'm hearing Vader, "If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?" So they were definitely pulling in very familiar concepts and tropes for a very different kind of episode. You know, we don't have really solidified duality of good and evil stuff going on here. I mean, yes, they're doing bad stuff because they're pirates, but the stakes don't seem to be quite as high at this point.
Right.
Oh, and the whole "don't go beyond the barrier" part reminded me of Moana 1, the first Moana, which I just seen for the first time two nights
before. Oh, really?
I saw this. So
that's funny.
You know, that concept very much, as you were saying, childhood and wanting to be adult, wanting to step beyond the barriers and finding out what happens when you do.
Very much in keeping with.
Well, yeah, it worked. I'm thinking it's going to work out for these folks too. But and
that,
I'm really glad
they're going to be the next Inquisitors.
No. I can see why they felt it necessary to do a 2-drop release for the first two, given the cliffhanger ending of Episode 1.
Yeah, I think it would have been really dissatisfying to have them just jump at the end of Episode 1. I think people would have been a little unsettled, because Episode 1 really shows a very modern and like real world modern, but also rigid society. Very rigid society, right? You're going to take this test at what are they, like 8, 10?
And I can't even comprehend what it is they're being tested on. Is it mathematics? Is it finance? Is it, you know, computer whatevers? Is it spaceship things? I mean, it's really...
It's a little bit of everything.
Really interesting. Yeah. But it's clearly the norm for this society.
Right.
Because they're not thinking twice about it. So, yeah, this is what we're going to do. And it slowly dawns on you that this is a highly controlled society, that droids seem to be running everything.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what people are accustomed to. And so how did that happen? Why did that happen?
Right. And does Fern's mom have any real power, or is she just kind of at the mercy of this system?
Yeah, well, you know, episode or two later, we do ask that question in even greater detail and depth.
Mm-hmm. All right, so why don't we listen to Alicia's voicemail and see what she had to say?
Hi, John and Marilyn. So glad you guys are checking in on this show. It really deserves our full coverage, but all these December releases are killing me. I really wish I could be there to talk with you about it, because I absolutely adored the first two episodes. I'm loving how diverse in alien terms this show is. I previously misstated, by the way, that Neil was an Ortolan, but he's not. They're keeping it canon that the Ortolans don't have arms and just use their feet for everything, like Max Rebo. So Neil is something new. And I'm also intrigued by Neil's crush, Runa. She has a really cool design. And of course, we saw the Shi Stavanin, like Marilyn and I talked about in the Red Moon story on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but most of all, I'm intrigued by this at Atten Planet. I love Star Wars suburbs, and no one's going to convince me that it's not the coolest thing ever to see an Ithorian walking her frog dog down a cul-de-sac. And by the way, frog dogs are sentient, so he's consciously choosing the pampered life here. But mostly, yeah, there's that intriguing mix of Old Republic nods and New Republic robots and things like that. So from the Old Republic, we get that Greek looking alphabet. It's called Tienes. We see like letters on their patches and documents and stuff. And of course, the currency, credit ingots, these would be really coveted in the New Republic galaxy. So no wonder they're calling it a treasure planet. And it sounded like the teacher was teaching the kids about complex currency exchanges. So I'm wondering, like, could this whole planet wind up being some kind of money laundering scheme? And yeah, that green swirly barrier blocking their view of the stars, is that natural or projected? There seems to be a grid of red dots in that sky, so I don't know if that's guards or something else. And the droid control is looking a little totalitarian, even though it really does seem like a nice place to live. This show might be going surprisingly deep into the socio-political commentary, and I'm here for it just as much as the adventure. And so far, I'm all in on the adventure, too. I think the kids are the right amount of likable versus believably annoying. Wim is definitely at the start of an arc toward maturity, and Neil is going to figure out really soon that he's ahead of him on that. But then again, Neil has a much warmer home life. So yeah, the writers have bought all my faith in the realistic complexity of the characters they're building in their world. So I'm very excited. And the lighting on this show, by the way, is absolutely stunning, just breathtaking at moments. We've got like Amblin vibes 2.0 going on. And yeah, one more thing. I'm worried about Aldani, the planet from Andor with that stunning, colorful eye phenomenon in the sky. SM33, I'm just going to call him Smee for now. Smee called it a sulfurous bog world. But then again, I'm wondering now, how old are Smee's memory banks? Like, could he be thousands of years old himself? And could this planet even like perhaps be stuck in the Old Republic, and like could that sky phenomenon be a time bubble? My brain is exploding thinking of all the possibilities, having lots of fun. All those questions. Can't wait for the rest of the ride, and I can't wait to hear what you both think. All right, bye.
Yeah, I was really taken with the fact that I had subtitles on, and I saw SM33, and I looked at it and I said, Smee! So now we're drawing in the pirates from Peter Pan.
Exactly.
It's just really fun.
Hook is really the iconic Hook Smee relationship.
Right. But, which, again, raises the question, all right, so who is the captain?
Yeah.
And does this captain have a hook?
Right.
And I have the feeling that the barrier is intentional.
Intentional by the people on the planet?
By the people who put people on the planet and who set up the whole organization, and you know, having them cut off from the rest of the galaxy is a protecting kind of a thing. So Elisa brought up the point about the credits and how, you know, they're so incredibly valuable in the rest of the galaxy. So I don't know. I don't like the idea that it's just one huge bank. I hope that's not it. But if that's all they have in terms of currency, you know, from whatever time they were set up. I love the way, very, very briefly, with only a very few lines, they've established the father-son relationship between Wim and his dad.
What relationship?
Well, exactly. You know, but the whole thing about, you know, after talking about something very frightening, and Wim says, could you read me a story? And the father says, aren't you a little too old for that? I'm like, holy cow. So one hopes that maybe the father is going to learn something too from all this.
Yes, the father is very confused as to why his son won't listen to him, but the only time he talks to him is when he's disciplining him.
Yeah, you noticed that.
So, yeah, I mean, he doesn't ever take the time to bond with the son. He's all business, and then the kids need more than that. So they need to goof around with dad sometimes. I just got done playing Monster Daddy like an hour ago, you know? You just got to do it. You just got to do it. Even when you're tired, even when you had a long day at work, you just got to do it.
And particularly with the mother, I think, dead or missing or gone or whatever. I mean, presumably the father is, this is in a way his form of grief, but nonetheless, it's just not healthy for either of them.
His mother is secretly Captain Silvo.
Oh, I see. I thought she was the one in the control tower.
I'm just joking.
So am I.
I'm just making a joke. So I want to talk, though, about something else Alicia said. The Old Republic aspect. What do you understand them meaning by the Old Republic? Because there is the Knights of the Old Republic, you know, the former Legends Old Republic. That's like thousands and thousands of years in the past. But there's also the fact that Obi-Wan even refers to the Palpatine era Republic as the Old Republic. Like, that's something that people would say in the original trilogy of the Old Republic. So are they just referring to some time during the recent Republic, even if it's in the High Republic, but within the last like 100 years, or are they referring to the distant past?
Well, you know, there's capital O Old Republic and there's small O Old Republic.
Yeah.
And this is way out of my, you know, level of knowledge of all things Star Wars. I'm sure you know more about this than I do. I can't even get them all straight in my head. When I hear Old Republic, I just think before the time of Palpatine, before the Empire, which is probably not accurate, so please don't at me. You know, those of you who have far more knowledge about Star Wars chronology than I do.
Well, Alicia's not here, so don't worry.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, I don't want her to at me either. but the,
I'm sure she will anyway. At both of us. We're going to say something wrong here.
Well, instead of adding us, she will, you know, offer
direction
and new knowledge. New knowledge. I think it's more confused by the fact that we're now dealing with, you know, canon, non-canon, new canon, rejected canon. You know, it just all gets very confusing unless you are really focused on it. I'm afraid I can only be deeply detailed at that level for one world at a time. And for me, the world is artists. So I do what I can with the Star Wars universe, but
it's tough to keep it all together, I guess. So my understanding of the current status of the eras is that the only thing we've got confirmed, fully named confirmed in canon now is the High Republic onward. High Republic and then the rise of the Sith, then Chancellor Palpatine takes over, then the Imperial era, war era, and so on and so on. But I don't think they've officially brought the Old Republic in. Now, there's been a lot of calls for them to do that because they could, you know, it's all the Old Republic. It's tens of thousands of years in the background. You don't have to have it connect.
Sounds old to me.
Right. And we've gotten references to Old Republic era stuff. So, for example, Darth Bane is referenced in the Clone Wars. I think Revan is also referenced at some point in the Clone Wars. I could be wrong about that. Somebody write in. But so we've gotten reference to these Old Republic Sith, but they could always say like, oh, well, that's not that Old Republic, right? That we just use the name. We just use the
likeness. That's what I was saying. Capital O, small O, right. You know?
But so my question is this them saying that they, are bringing the Old Republic into canon, or is this just them using Old Republic as in like, oh, the Old Republic before the Empire? Because that is a thing that is colloquially used in the original trilogy.
And that's how I understand it. You know, my Star Wars roots are largely in the original trilogy.
Right. As in like, it's not the New Republic. It's not what we just made.
Right. It's, you know, it's not, it's BBY as opposed to whatever the after Robin.
Right. Well, anyway, that's my era question. I have questions listed later that I'm just going to bring in as we go. And then the next question I have relatedly is Atten in a time bubble?
Yeah, a lot of people put that forward, haven't they? I hope it isn't.
Yeah.
I really do. I hope that it's, I mean, we're seeing subsequent generations. But that, of course, there's an interesting piece that comes in subsequent episodes. I don't know if you want to bring that in now or wait till later, concerning the whole Atten phenomenon. But my initial sense was this planet has been set aside and protected for some reason or other, and I believe that it is the New Republic that has done so.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of chaos out there, and they needed a safe place in which to, I don't know, develop whatever it is they're developing. And yeah.
But then who protected it during the era of the Empire?
Was it even in existence then?
At Aden?
Mm.
It had to have been, right? If this has, if they have Old Republic credits, if every if the language is from, you know, the lettering is all Old Republic, if they're if they're completely unaware that the war happened, because that's a thing.
Are they? I had missed. No, that went over my head completely.
Yeah. Well, he goes, "Oh, the Old Republic," and they're like, "Old Republic? It's just the Republic." And he goes, "Missed the war? Did you?" And they didn't know that Alderaan was destroyed either.
Right. Right.
He said, "Oh, we
right.
learned about Alderaan," and they're like, "Missed the war? Did you?"
Okay, so I could revise my theory to say it is still intentionally protected by somebody in the Old Republic, but what we're seeing is, you know, generation 2, 3, and 4, whatever it was they set up. And it's still a, you know, a barrier rather than a time bubble. But, you know, it could be a time bubble. I'm not particularly stuck on any one theory.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll have to put a pin in the time bubble question because I don't think we have enough information yet.
Definitely. Definitely.
Why don't we move into the next section, which I'm calling the finding friends. You know, we're allying with some people here.
Or trying to.
Mm-hmm. The for ship's droid, Shmi. Wait, do you call him Shmi or do you call him just SM-33?
I call him Shmi in my own mind.
Okay.
But, or, you know, 33. Yeah. In the usual Star Wars fashion of calling droids by their numbers.
Right. 3PO. Like, why? 3PO I never liked. I never liked the way that they said that. Just say C-3PO. It's the same thing.
Well, R2, as opposed to R2-D2.
Yeah, yeah. At least you use a letter in that one. All right, so finding friends. The ship's droid, SM-33, wakes up with Fern claiming to have defeated the prior captain to win the droid's loyalty. The droid takes the kids to a pirate outpost to get directions back to At-Aden. However, everyone looks at them like they're crazy for talking about the lost treasure planet and paying with Old Republic coins. They're imprisoned where they meet Silvo or Jod, whatever his name is, Captain Jack. What was it? Crazy Jack or something?
Crimson Jack.
Crimson Jack. I like that. I like that. That's fun.
Another nod to Pirates of the Caribbean, I think.
Yeah. Together, they escape the pirate outpost and head to Silvo's acquaintance and future merch subject, Kim, who gives them what she thinks is the coordinates of the lost planet. Of course, she has also ratted them out to the Republic, but...
Details, details.
Well, in fairness, you got this guy who obviously is shady, and he's running around with some kids who need help.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's
probably the right choice to call the authorities.
And, you know, in very Han fashion, Silva has already said, we go way back, but I don't trust her. You know, again.
Right.
One of those echoings. And I love the way the we also get the line, watch this. And of course, watch this rarely works in the Star Wars universe. And it doesn't work now.
It's funny. Yeah, you know, though, it is lovely to have another charming scoundrel, a scoundrel with a heart of gold. Like, that is just such a Star Wars tried and true.
Definitely. True. Definitely.
What do you think about Silvo, Jod, Crimson Jack in general? You liking this guy?
Well, it's Jude Law, so I have a hard time not liking him.
Yeah.
In some respects.
That's the thing. They'll sometimes cast a very likable actor for a character who wouldn't otherwise be likable because they want you to empathize with them more.
It's the charming rogue trope, right? And, you know, do I trust charming rogues? I absolutely do not.
But you're charmed by them.
Yeah, but it is interesting. I mean, he does say, look, we both have the same goal. We both want to get out of here. I can pilot the ship better than you can. And we both would like to get to At-Aden because clearly there's knowledge of At-Aden throughout the pirate community from the way they're all reacting to it. And so he must have that same knowledge. And
right.
I suspect has a notion that he can figure out what this treasure is. But it also leads me to questions of, who was it that buried the ship on Ed Adden
mm-hmm.
with an automated homing setting to take them back to a pirate stronghold?
Is that where it was definitely taking them? I thought it was taking them somewhere else first, and then SM-33 rerouted. He's like,
oh no, that's right.
I'll take you there.
That's right. So where was it taking them initially? Do you remember?
I think their home world, their home base or something.
Whose home world, home base?
The captain, the previous captain.
Okay. All right.
So, but I'm not completely sure about that.
We still don't.
But I believe SM-33 rerouted them when they said we need directions. It's like, oh, you can get directions at this place. I know all the pirates there.
That's right. Thank you. It has been a while since I've seen.
That's right. You were distracted by the rat living in his eye.
By the way, that rat seems to have an effect on Smee's memory.
Yes, the rat does. And you're like, was that the captain?
Let's hope not.
You say in your notes that you have a theory about the captain. Can you tell me?
Well, my theory is that the captain managed to find his or her way to At-Aten and saw a great opportunity for some kind of scheme or other. And so they buried this ship as an exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
If the plans went awry, it's wild, but I'm wondering if the captain might wind up being involved with the, the tower somehow. I can't remember what they call it on At-Aten, you know, the tower where the Supreme Commander, the Supreme
Intelligence. Yeah, that was the Fallen works. Sanctum, I believe.
Fallen Sanctum. No, that was on the other planet.
Yeah, that was on At-Akron.
Right. So what is the name of the place?
Oh, good question. I can't remember right now.
On At-Aten. Anyway, this is just a wilder speculation, but I still want to know. I have to think it was someone, you know, with at least a moderate piratical disposition who planted this ship there. And I think it had to have been a getaway because it was pre-programmed to go to a certain place.
Mm.
Which had to be connected with whoever it was that planted it there in the first place.
So right.
That's as far as my thoughts can go on that one.
All right. Well, we'll have to see. I don't think we have enough clues yet to figure out who it is, unless it's the rat. That's what I'm betting on. He accidentally turned himself into a rat with the great work.
Well, I don't think the great work goes into, you know, animal transformation, but who knows?
You never know.
You never know.
It's actually just the Animagus Academy from Harry Potter, right?
Of course. Of course. Yeah. This scene with the parents, you know, the frantic parents trying to, you know, get their kids and being told, oh, sorry, you can't contact anyone or anything outside the barrier, not even to save four children, one of whom has medical issues. Classic thing for a parent to say under these circumstances. And that KB is something of a mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is her visor? What's
right,
that?
Right. She doesn't seem to need it all the time because sometimes she flips it up. How right. is her mind so capable of calculating and I'm wondering if she was some kind of special project.
Maybe she was the captain.
I don't think the ages work out quite well for that.
In a way, we're all the captain.
Are we? Okay. All right, fine.
Yeah, but there's a lot of questions surrounding her. But she does seem like a kid a lot of the time, too. You know, like she does.
Oh, absolutely.
Like a kid as well. So that's like what's
going on here? But she has that kind of maturity that some children develop when they have illnesses very young.
Yeah.
You know, they're faced with a lot of issues that their peers just aren't faced with. And right. That can go in a number of directions, of course. But in many directions, it is, you know, a much more adult outlook on the world because you're dealing with more adult issues that a lot of kids don't have to deal with if they're right. fortunate.
I remember in a literature class once I was told, the professor goes, you know, a lot of these people were just sickly kids and they were in bed a lot and they read a lot right. and they became really intelligent.
Right, right. Well, you know, Christopher Tolkien, he had a heart condition around age 10.
Mm-hmm.
And, spent a lot of time with his father telling him stories. And I think a definite bond was built there.
Right.
So it tracks. It definitely tracks. There's a group that people will train as storytellers to go into children's hospital cancer wards because they have found that listening to stories actually affects the pain center of the brain. and distracts you from it. So there's a lot of power in story.
Yeah, for sure. Now, let me ask you about a different kind of power. The mouse, Disney. How much do you think they're going to push this Kim as an action figure and doll? The owl friend?
Yeah, well.
The merch is coming.
It seems like a no-brainer to me. For sure. Yeah. I really like that character a lot.
Yeah, she was cool. She was cool.
And they realized her very well in terms of her flying around and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And it's somewhat, you know, you think, well, okay, if Jod is such a shady character, what's she doing hanging around with him? If she's above board and reasonably kind, which she is. But of course, you know, as an archivist and researcher and scholar, I love her approach to, yes, we can find this out and let's look at here. Oh, and look at this. This is really interesting. And that whole aspect of her character appealed to me.
Right. Let me ask you something too about Silvo. So Silvo obviously is a force user. We can see that.
Yes. Another big mystery here, isn't it?
Yeah. But also, do you remember when they're doing their escape? And I think it's KB. She's like, no, there's someone else coming. They're like, wait, KB can use the force too? And Jod just goes, well, the force goes through us all. And that's, you know, that's, we know that's true.
Yeah.
We won't relitigate Ahsoka. But my point is, like, is KB also force sensitive? Is that part of it? It was KB, right?
I'm not remembering the scene very well, but the first thing I think of is, well, she's got all that tech around her head, so maybe she's just got extra sensory whatever. Not as an ESP, but as in technologically, she can take in more information or has sharper hearing or sight or whatever.
You know, I'm okay whether I got that right or wrong, because if I got it right, great. We had a nice discussion. If I got it wrong, we're going to get a lot of feedback. And that's the best way to get feedback, is just to get a detail wrong from the show.
No kidding. Yeah, my sort of headcanon right now for Jod's background is that he started off in Jedi training and then either got booted or something in his life happened to interrupt him and his training, or he just decided it wasn't for him and kind of scammed off and still has the minimal skills. And he's not wrong. In my understanding, everybody has access to the Force. And
yeah.
Whether or not you recognize it and can use it and manipulate it, or if it's just what, you know, some of us would call ESP or, you know, leadings or intuitions or whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to need a blood sample for midichlorians. I'm not going to be satisfied
No. Don't bring up midichlorians. That just ruined so much for me.
I'm fine with midichlorians because I grew up with it. It was already a thing by the time I got into Star Wars, you know?
Yeah, but for me, that was one of the most beautiful aspects of the original trilogy, was that, wow, you can have science fiction and there can even be a spiritual component.
Right.
It's wonderful.
Or we could add midichlorians to the bloodstream.
And totally mess it up.
All right, let's get into the third section. And then after I read it, I'm going to get Alicia's takes in. I just want to get the whole plot out here.
Okay.
The friends we made along the way. The group lands on what they think is At-Aden, but ends up being at Akron. The kids get taken by the Troiks, and Neil befriends the heir to their army before the group is made bait for an attack on their enemies, the Hattans. Is it the Hattans or the Hattans? I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
We're never going to see them again. It's fine.
Oh, don't be too sure. But they did kind of make it seem like, yeah.
I don't think we're going to see them.
They ended that arc.
Yeah. Silvo arrives just in time to stop the battle using trade and buys the kids back. They are given directions to the Fallen Sanctum, where they discover the coordinates to all of the jewels of the Republic. However, the coordinates to At-Aden have been destroyed by none other than Smee, when he came with the last captain. His memories of At-Aden were then restricted until Fern overrides the command. SM-33 goes berserk, but Neil and Silvo save the other kids. And what a beautiful moment for Neil, right? He spent the whole episode being afraid, like shaking because he didn't want to go forward. Mm-hmm. He's the one who saves his friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a really wonderful episode for Neil generally. In some ways, it felt a bit simplistic to me, On the other hand, I'm really glad that they're addressing this issue, because I remember in the previous episode, I was kind of startled that neither Fern nor Wim were shy of shooting their guns at two piloted spaceships.
Yeah.
And I wondered, okay, so this sort of the video game, you know, taking over here. Surely they have an understanding that they could actually kill a person that way. And are they comfortable with that? So here we actually get to explore those issues on the ground in a real setting. And I think what they're getting is, okay, this whole being a hero business isn't all it's racked up to be.
Yeah.
And wow. And
Silvo gets that, right? And he comes in, he's a very realist guy. And I put this question in, is Silvo a good guy? For me, I don't think that's the question. I think it's right now he's kind of a self-serving guy. And he knows that these kids are his ticket back to Ad-Adden and maybe a reward.
He's pragmatic. He's very pragmatic.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I want to know how he, A, learned about the culture so fast, B, figured out that the animals were the way back in, and C, got a whole herd of them and brought them in the exactly right moment. That was a little jazz handy for me. They never really offered any explanation of how did he wind up there, how did he find, you know, et cetera, what I just said.
I did laugh out loud with, all right, just shoot me. You know, he just sits on the ground. Yeah. And like, I'm not going to talk my way out of this one. But I think that was his way of talking his way out, right? I think that's what happened. Oh,
unquestionably. Yeah. It was such a startling thing to say that they kind of went, huh?
Yeah,
exactly. And that became his opening, his in.
Yeah. He had
their attention, and so he went, well, there's a pirate captain. He kind of had to, right?
Right.
I mean, this is the whole, you know, charming rogue thing again.
He really does have, like, a knack for reading people. I mean, when he tells the kids, all right, you got to go to sleep now. And Fern goes, I'm not tired. And then it cuts to her being like fast asleep. It's very good. Very good moment. Very good, you know, stupid comedy. But
yeah,
I do like that he kind of just reads, you know, he's obviously not like a kid person, but he's doing it anyway. You know, yeah, he's doing the dad thing anyway.
He's comfortable around them and he knows a lot about them. Now, how did that come about?
He listens. I think he listens very well. I think that's a big part of his character. And I think those kids talk a lot.
Oh, sure, they do. They've never had to be cautious, have they?
Because no.
There is no danger in their world, apparently. Right. Or very little danger. You know, they're protected from so much.
Kid still can't make it to his test on time.
Well, I mean, that's kind of part of the whole shtick of, you know, Wim being the starry-eyed adventure, excitement. A Jedi does not crave these things. And I find it interesting that... right before KB, my first question had been at the end of episode one when he used the force to get the key. My first question was, well, why didn't he just escape already? And then KB asked that very question the next episode, and I'm like, yes, exactly. And that is a good question. I mean, he says he didn't. Why escape if I don't have a ship? But, you know, there may be other reasons, and maybe we'll know them, and maybe we won't.
I think he had hope for the first time in a while. Because he's here to talk about Ad-Adden. He says to his buddy who he sees on the way out, Tristan Ryan is steal back.
Right.
Smee, he goes, I'm finally going to do it. My big score I always talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is how we are first introduced to him. You know, the boarding of the other ship is supposed to be his big moment, and they get exactly one box of credits or something like that. Right. So, and again, that whole scene very much like the mutiny against Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
But I guess there's a certain pirate trope that everybody is familiar with and, you know, perhaps even expecting.
I've told this story at greater length on Second Breakfast, but when I visited Ireland with my now wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, we stayed at this guy's house who used to have a ship, and we were pretty sure he was a pirate. just the way he talked. And
right.
And
right.
One of the other guests at this B&B goes, you got a ship? Yeah. How did it go down? Slowly. It always gets me. Always got me.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you know, there are certain people who can really craft the whole persona of a rogue with the really sharp wit and the one-liners. And
right. Of course. You know. Of course, then the Wisconsinite who was asking him goes, whoa, but really, how did it go down? He goes, why, are you from the insurance company?
Yeah.
So yes, yeah. I'm pretty sure he was a pirate, but he ran a lovely B&B.
Well, there you go. So, you know, man to multiple talents, and I guess you can be a pirate and understand enough about kids to be able to make use of them, but, you know, in the nicest possible way, because you are trying to help them accomplish their goal.
Right. And even we know SM33 has a babysitter mode.
Right.
Initiating babysitter protocol. I'm going to count now.
Which reminds me, why does Wim have no droid babysitter?
I don't know.
You know, it was a really interesting, well, of course, you know, plot reason is because he needs to sneak out and be late for breakfast and all those other kinds of things.
Yeah. Maybe he's just in the lower class. Maybe there was something to do with the reason his mom's not there, is something droid related. You never know.
Yeah, that could be. Which also reminds me of another question that I have. And why is it that, you know, Silbo/Jod is so averse to droids? They make a big thing of it when, you know, we first see him and Smee, but it doesn't come up after that. But I'm just wondering if that's going to reappear, you know, at some point.
You know, I there's two things I want to say there. One, I was not that jarred by it because droidism is so common in Star Wars.
Well, that's true.
I was like, I think this people just don't like droids most of the time. A lot of the common folk. And second is, I think part of it is the trepidation is he is a pirate captain, and he didn't know who the previous captain was, and he didn't know, have we crossed paths before? Are you going to look me up? Are you going to blow my cover? That's how I read that.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So droidism didn't even come into my mind. But even if it did, I was like, well, you know, the Mandalorian, Din Djarin hates droids too.
Fair point. Yeah. Episode 4, I may have already said this to some degree, but I love the fact that they were covering this topic of warfare and you know, child soldiers and so many of these other things. And the beauty of the simplicity of Neil's, you know, I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't, you know, I want my friends to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely and wonderful and fine and very simplistic. And I'm wondering how many even kids in the audience are going to be looking at that and saying, well, that's not how the world is. This is probably the episode which felt the most constrained by what it conceived of as its child audience, which is an odd thing to say when it features child soldiers and children marching off with guns that are bigger than they are, knowing absolutely nothing of what to do and being, you know, the bait and all.
I mean, yeah.
It was an odd sort of episode that way for me.
You know, one of the lessons I hope to impart on my kids as they get older a little bit is if an adult tries to convince you that you're also an adult or should be acting like an adult, that's not a safe adult that you're talking to.
No, that's very good message to give them.
Like, for any reason, if an adult tries to be like, you're so mature, or you're an adult, no, you run away. Run in the opposite direction.
No, you're not.
Yes, yes.
Smile nicely.
You might feel mature. You are not. Run in the other direction. And I think the same is true here. They're like, we respect the children of this.
Wasn't that an interesting line?
And so I thought that was really well written, honestly, because I thought that that's exactly how you would do that in this world. You say, like, well, we respect the children. That's why we let them fight with us.
Yeah, and even let them lead the raids and whatnot.
Right. And do you think that was a deliberately faulty weapon they gave him?
Yeah, that's a chilling question, isn't it?
I think it was.
Probably. Plus, the whole overall feel of it was a bit preachy to me. Although, as you're now pointing out, there are some nuances in it. So
yeah, I didn't feel preachy, honestly. I thought there was a lot of nuance. I thought, you know, the kids there were brainwashed, obviously, but even the brainwashed kids were like, ah, this feels a little off. Maybe we don't have to do this.
Yeah, and again, you're facing four kids who have come from a world which doesn't have any particular dangers as far as we can tell.
Right.
Except missing the bus and displeasing your parents and
right,
you know, things of that nature, and trying to cross one of the droids, whether they're, you know, a nanny or a guard or whatever.
Right.
So they're completely out of their depth and their knowledge and whatever. But, you know, using Neil as the source of, you know, the empathy and the connection and the, you know, no, this is wrong. Just that simple but, you know, firm stance.
Mm.
And then, as you say, turning around and, you know, using himself as bait.
Right.
And all is, I don't know, I think he'd make a good friend. Capital F friend, a good Quaker.
You know, since Horton hears a who, we've known that elephants have big hearts and big ears. And Neil is no different.
Well, I'm not sure he has big ears, but...
Well, you know what I mean. I'm just trying to make a Dr. Seuss joke. You want to hear what Alicia has to say?
Absolutely. Let's hear it.
Here we go.
Hi, John and Marilyn. Alicia back with part two of my voicemail. Some thoughts on episodes 3 and 4 of Skeleton Crew. The mystery deepens. First of all, shout out to Kim from episode 3. Loved her. I always think of owls as cats with wings. Like, if you follow owls on Instagram, which, yes, I do, you can see that they have some really cat-like behavior with humans. So I love that Kim is literally both. And somebody please send me a Kim costume for my cat. I'm sure he's going to love it.
Oh, boy.
But episode 4 was especially intriguing. I was surprised they would be going home so soon. Of course, it's not that easy. It was cool to see what happened on another one of those quote-unquote jewels of the Old Republic at Akron. So we're not looking at like an Alderaan situation. The planet still exists. It's just fallen into, an apocalypse, basically. Though we still don't know if they mean that these are jewels of the Old Republic, as in thousands of years ago, or the High Republic, as in, you know, the Acolyte time and before that, or just not the New Republic, which could technically be any point in the timeline up to Order 66, which happens in Revenge of the Sith. So... I don't know, but I've got to think that they mean at least the High Republic with the show's mention of the great work and things like that. And I hope so, because I really want to explore new parts of the timeline. My title for this episode is Mad Max Goonies. And I think Runa better watch out, because Neil has a new love of his life. By the way, I brought up in my first voicemail that I really wanted to know what species Runa was. So thank you very much to Star Wars Data Bank, for the official Star Wars website, wiki of sorts, for identifying Runa's species. She's a Vazooan, and we actually saw another Vazooan in the background at Akron in episode 4. So I need to know more about the species stat. Thank you very much, Pablo Hidalgo. But I have questions about that accent that the people on that planet were doing. It seems to be some sort of put-on French accent. I looked it up. The girl was better at it than the guy who played her father. But they are both American. I double-checked. I mean, there's no way that was a real French accent. But it was clearly trying to be a French accent, which begs the question, why have two Americans put on this fake accent? Like, is there going to be some weird tie to Ryloth or something? And Ryloth is, again, the planet of the Twi'leks. And they speak with a French accent in English, or basic is the universe language. So that's, I don't know. It's just such a specific choice. Why? The word Akron, though, seems to come from Irish, where it can mean an act of quarreling or strife. So that seems apt. And while we're doing linguistics, I did look up Aten, and it could come from the Latin atta or ati, as in fit or capable for a task, or it could come from the singular form of the Gothic German word for father. It does happen to also be the name of a commune in France, but it could also be absolutely none of those things. So I was really wondering, when they went to the supervisor's tower, if they were going to find AI there, because I've been suspicious that it wasn't like... that it's some sort of robot actually in charge of the supervisor. But of course, that mystery still remains. There's a lot of internet speculation that the supervisor on Atatin could be Hondo, but I think that's just wishful thinking. Although, yes, it's about time that we see more Hondo Anaka in live action. anyway, I feel like all my theories from my voicemail, my first voicemail, are still in play, and I'm very intrigued to see where this goes. I can't wait to find out why Atatin feels so sinister. I hope they tell us more about KB and her mysterious medical condition, and just protect Neil at all costs. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Well, Alicia, you may as well have been here with us because you hit on basically all the same things we did, although we didn't talk about the French accent.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that she made a French connection with the etymology of the name of the place.
I thought it was Irish with the name of the place.
Okay, but there was something else French that was...
Yeah, the accents were very French. Do you know the pirate that I was talking about before, the real-life pirate? Who I sit in his Airbnb, not Airbnb, regular B&B. When he opened the door for us, he goes, "Are you French?" And we said, "No."
Right,
goes,
right.
Good.
Right.
I hate the French. So there's my French connection.
Yeah. Well,
we love the French here, by the way. We love the French.
Of course.
Pirate Tom does not represent the views of this podcast.
Mais bien sûr, les Français sont fantastiques.
Oui.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the great work is intended to help create a peaceful world.
Yes, that's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
With my other, kind of doesn't really work with my other theory that, you know, the supervisor in the tower is the former pirate who came along and ditched his plane and
that would be pretty far. That would be pretty fun if it was. I would be good with that.
It would be a lot of fun. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I was relieved that Fern finally showed some humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the first time that she really accepts that, you know, she's a kid.
Right.
And, I mean, to actually say to Wim, "No, you should have been the captain," that's pretty big for her to do.
Although that line was the one where I was like, I don't think she would have gone that far.
No, like, I don't.
Realistically,
it felt fast to me somehow.
Yeah, saying like I don't want to do this is one thing. Saying you should have done this, I don't think there's any evidence that he should have done it. Look,
kids
all have like, you know, kid genuineness and every now and then some kid annoying stuff. There's no one who's more obnoxious than Wim, right? I mean, they're hiding from the army, and he's poking his head directly out. Almost getting them caught. He's the one who pulled the lever, right? Like, he is the one causing problems this entire time.
Well, I don't know if I'd call it obnoxious. I think I'd call it thoughtless. Careless.
Yeah.
Again, raised in a world in which there are pretty much no dangers that we have seen or can think of. Which, again, comes back to what happened to his mother.
Yeah. You know, do you ever read The Giver?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, I think you would like it. It's a book actually I had to read in like middle school or something like that. And it's very popular though. I think it's very commonly assigned reading in grade school now. And it's like a light science fiction book, like a little bit science fiction, I mean, where it's a society much like this one in which you are basically like given your job at age of like 12, 13.
Wow.
And you are made an apprentice at that age, and then that is what you will do for the rest of your life. The society knows what you are best at, and you will do that.
Oof.
Then there is one member of the society called the Giver, and that person is supposed to hold the memories of the society, so they actually can transfer memories generation to generation. And the protagonist, the POV protagonist in this book, is the child who's selected as the apprentice of the Giver.
Hmm. Interesting.
And he's slowly realizing that this world used to have more color in it, you know? Used to be better. And I don't want to spoil the book, because it's a really great book, but it's really interesting. This whole society on Atatin really reminds me of it.
Well, yeah, particularly how many times the kids say it's such a boring world. Why would anybody want to go there?
Right.
And that's partly what's contributing to, you know, the desire for adventure and, you know, I mean, everybody has a desire to be special at various points throughout their lives. And some of us, you know, carries on throughout all of our life. But I found it interesting that, you know, it's Neil and Wim that are really cool in the Jedi and want to be Jedi and fight with Jedi. And it's KB and Fern, who are just not interested in anything Jedi. And I'm wondering if that's a little bit of gendering bias going on.
Well, also, the Jedi thing is another clue that this has to be pre-Empire, because they're not shocked to meet a Jedi when they meet him, right? They're not shocked. He would just be out in the world, whereas post-war, post-Order 66, you meet a Jedi and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, interesting point. I have the feeling that the various shows are trying to kind of ease in the notion of, yeah, you know, it wasn't really all the Jedi who were destroyed.
Oh, well,
they're kind of stepping back from that, you know, which the whole concept of which, of course, came initially in the first three films.
Yeah, so at the time of Order 66, there were approximately 10,000 Jedi around. So again, 1% of the Jedi would still be 100 Jedi, right?
But scattered throughout an entire galaxy, right?
Yeah.
No, I understand what you're saying.
I just mean, like, I think it's fine to have a decent amount of survivors, because they were scattered around the galaxy. They were all on missions, a lot of them. You know, the people on Coruscant, who were, I think, the main victims, and the people on the war front, too, who were next to clones, weren't the only Jedi around. There were a lot of Jedi on peaceful missions, too.
Right, right.
So, anyway.
Clearly Jedis are a big part of their imaginal world.
Right. Right.
And that does, again, speak to this kind of pre-imperial origin. Or, alternatively, they're surrounded, you know, by the barrier. They don't go out to other worlds. Which, again, comes back to the time bubble thing. But if it's just multi-generations throughout time on this planet, they could still hold the stories of the Jedi and whether or not they knew that of Order 66 and what had happened.
Right.
But it seems as though they don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they know at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Missed the whole war, did you?
Exactly. Exactly. Like, talking about Alderaan, you're like, oh.
Right. 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 But on the other hand, if it's a highly protected planet, you know, that doesn't want kids to know about horrible things, maybe they wouldn't.
Then why would you teach them about Alderaan as kids? Just teach them it never existed.
That's right. They did. They did know about Alderaan.
They taught them. Well, we learned about other planets, this Alderaan, and then you're like, well. So if you didn't want them to ever know the tragedy existed, why not? Why just leave it out of the curriculum? We censor things all the time by just leaving them out of our curricula.
Or alternatively, have it as part of the curriculum and just don't mention. Oh, by the way, it was destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah. You won't be going on a vacation there.
No. No.
No. But I guess you can't go on vacation at all, so whatever.
Doesn't seem that, at least not outside the home world.
Right, right.
And it's also interesting that with all this knowledge and excitement about Jedi and so forth, that more people don't want to get off planet. Because you're part of a society in which, you know, going from planet to planet is a common thing. You know what a starship is. You know what, you know, warp drive is, or I'm not getting the right terms here right now. How do they know all that if they never light speed?
Yeah,
you know, jumping. How is it that they don't? How is it that they do know these things?
I think it's all the propaganda, right? Like, they have this very effective propaganda machine of, we are doing a great work for the Republic. We must stay here. And if the droids are running things and you don't have any ships, how are you going to get off anyway?
Right, exactly. But then why continue telling the stories about all the other worlds and everything?
Maybe they got to do calculations between the worlds. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, well, that comes back to what is it that they're learning in their schools.
They're actually just doing all the calculations for all the hyperdrives in the universe. That's the whole game. That's the great work. What do you think the treasure is, I want to ask you?
On Ed Atten?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's money.
They seem to have a lot of it, though.
Yeah, but where are they going to spend it?
Anywhere.
How? And
apparently everywhere wants it.
But every off world.
Yep.
For them, it's just, all right, it's like a handful of quarters. Because, you know, what they have to spend it on, presumably, you know, they all get jobs, it sounds like, although jobs of varying levels. And some positions are more important than others. I don't know if that means they're paid more than others.
Yeah, who knows?
There's just too many things we don't know at this point.
Can I ask you, why didn't they? So they had coordinates to other jewels of the Republic. Mm. We know that SM-33 scratched out this set of coordinates for Ad-Adden. Mm. Why can't they just beam around to different jewels and go to the supervisor tower until they find one that's not corrupted?
Well, I mean, first thought is they're all corrupted.
But are they? That's the question. I mean, maybe they are. Maybe the captain had the, had SM-33 go to every single one and destroy
it.
But I don't think we've been told that yet.
Well, and the captain may have been one of the higher-ups who set up the whole Ad-Adden thing in the first place.
I don't think so, because then why is he looking for it? And why does he want it kept secret?
Which he is looking for it.
Well, the captain was looking for Ad-Adden at a certain point, right?
Okay.
The old captain?
Yeah, so as you say, once he finds evidence of it, why does he have Smee destroy it?
No, I understand why he wants him to destroy that one, but I just mean, did he go around and then destroy it at all the other ones? Hmm. I don't know about that. I don't know. I have no evidence of that yet.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, how many people can get into all these important towers on these jewels of the old Republic planet?
Well, let me ask you some fun bonus questions, Marilyn.
Okay.
Your favorite character so far?
Oh, that's hard. I'm torn between KB and Neil.
I'm actually exactly the same. I think
there you go.
Neil warms my heart on like a he's a good kid, you know? Mm-hmm. And KB, I have so many questions and there's so much mystery, and so I want to know there.
Yeah, I think those are my reasons as well. Along with, well, I had something where I said, what did I say? KB is the mind of the group and Neil is the heart of the group.
Yeah. I like that. And then Wim is just the whim of the group.
that could be something that drove his
and Fern is middle management.
Right. Fern is definitely the you know, executive functioning of the brain, as it were. And Wim is the you know, the adventure excitement.
Yeah, the pleasure center of the brain, the adrenaline.
There you go. That works.
Impulse non-control. Favorite episode so far?
Probably the one with Kim in it. It's interesting. I've liked them all equally. The fourth one felt kind of like a letdown for some of the things that I've already talked about.
Hmm.
Not that it was bad. I mean, it was just, you know, less good than the others. But that's when we finally started getting some answers.
Right.
The first one, you know, we get set up with a lot of interesting information. You know, the whole stereotype of, you know, boys don't like girls and vice versa thing. That got a little tedious after a while. And I certainly did not sense Fern as a likable character in the early episodes. I mean, I warmed to her more as time went on.
Okay, fair enough.
And, I mean, not Rot... Silvo is a very intriguing character, and he's got a lot of mystery to him and so on. I like the way he is being responsible for the kids, even if it is in his own best interests. I mean, I think he goes beyond just the pragmatic best interests.
I agree with that. I think he honestly probably got as much info as he was going to get with the kids just when he finished with Kim. And after that,
right,
he's starting to actually just be dad.
Right. And particularly with the whole rescuing of him thing.
No.
No, I mean, what more do they have to offer him at this point if you're going to be strictly pragmatic about it all?
Right. Because I bet the Hatans could also tell him how to get to the Fallen Tower.
Sure.
Yep.
But they can't tell him where Adatin is.
Right. I did like this episode, but I think episode 2 was the most fun, just getting to the pirate den.
Yeah.
And I think that was just the most fun I had all season.
It was the most colorful.
Yeah.
Certainly.
And do you have any hopes for the rest of the season? Anything that would be a delight if you had by the end of the season?
Interesting choice of language there. Obviously, I hope that we get the, all the mystery boxes opened up and resolved. And, well, I hope that, Wim's family life gets a little improved somehow.
Yeah.
I think that would be awfully nice.
Wouldn't it? He needs an adult in his life that is not just completely cold.
Or completely immersed in his own grief. That's right. How I'm reading it at this point. I may be wrong.
You ever watched Shrinking yet?
No.
Okay. Shrinking, the first episode, the premise is the main character is a therapist and he lost his wife a year ago.
Oh, right.
And okay. He's like just waking up, but he has a kid too. And one of the questions is, was it fair of him to kind of check out for a year when he has a teenager who's also grieving?
Well, yeah, I mean, fair is one thing. How much society encouraged, particularly men.
Yeah. But this man who's a therapist, right? Who knows.
I know, but a lot of people.
Can you do it to yourself is the question.
A lot of people become therapists because they have their own issues to resolve.
Right. Yeah, no, I just think it's an interesting
question.
That's
why you always be careful to.
Yeah, we can bring over to Wim's dad, right? Like the same question of if he is grieving, like what's going on here?
Well, I haven't seen a lot of signs of, evidence that people are taught about emotional sense smarts and empathy. And
Marilyn, we're not going to do a podcast tonight, but we should eventually on the detriment to society by the emphasis on STEM above all.
Yeah. I'm, mm-hmm.
The devaluing of liberal arts.
I could certainly have things to say on that.
Yeah. Well, here we are talking about Star Wars for an hour and a half because we can, and it's good
Kel
for
surprise.
Us.
Kel surprise.
It's good for our emotional well-being.
Yes.
Any other thoughts quick before we head on to the outro?
Just that it's a really wonderful ride and, each week I think, okay, what are they going to show us this time? And I'm looking forward to some resolutions.
Yeah.
Having to wait until mid-January is a little vexing, but there it is.
Well, it's weekly. I'm okay with weekly.
Yeah. No, I am too.
It's nice to be able to digest it a little bit.
They're a nice quick watch.
Yeah.
And of course, holiday time anyway. People are going to have a lot of things to focus on.
Speaking of things to focus on.
Yes.
We've got plenty here on the Lorehounds feed. We've got Christmas galore. You've got two episodes out already on A Christmas Prince trilogy and the Princess Switch trilogy, which are both very absurd, and we had a lot of fun recording them. Then,
yes,
just after this podcast drops, you will get another podcast on the public feed. By the way, sorry, the first two Christmas pods are Patreon and Supercast only. The third podcast will be on the public feed. We're going to cover Our Little Secret and Hot Frosty. Hot Frosty is exactly what you think it is. It is about Frosty the Snowman if he were a hunk. He comes
hunk
to life.
What?
What'd you say, Marilyn?
A hunk of what?
A hunk of man. That's what he is.
Okay. Not a hunk of snow and a hunk of cold.
Nope. He is full human, although he can melt for some reason. Anyway.
Oops.
Anyway.
Little detail. No.
It's ridiculous.
No, chestnuts by an open roasting fire for him, I guess.
No. It's a whole plot point, Marilyn. He can't get too warm or he's going to go back to the water.
Uh-oh. But
anyway, so We're doing a lot of Christmas stuff. We've got a Silmarillion story coming on. What did we record on? The Coming of Men into the West. That's what we did.
That's right. That's right.
Yes. So we've got that coming just after Christmas. But on Christmas Day, you're going to get our yearly annual second breakfast that goes out for the public that has our top 10 TV shows of 2024. It's got we already recorded it. We've got the three of us giving our list. We've got the community list. We've got some bonus questions. It was a lot of fun to record. I think it's like 2.5 hours.
And some top three from your...
Well, bonus. I'm getting there, Marilyn. That's the bonus episode.
That's the bonus episode, part two.
And we're going to have Marilyn, you're on it, and all the other affiliates, everybody who responded at least, is going to be doing giving their top three and giving some of their bonus questions. So.
And it was really hard to only have three. I mean, I'm listening to all these guys complain about lists of 10, and I'm like, hey, you don't know hard.
Well, there was math to be done for the community ranking, so don't worry.
I'll bet there was.
Very thorough. I used rank choice voting, so.
Ooh, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
We had a great time with it.
Just like the conclave.
There you go. There you go. And then let me just talk about the affiliates quick. Also, Alicia has a Comics Versus episode coming out that I have no idea about. I don't know what anything going on with it, but it's coming out. She said she recorded it already.
Well, there.
And Wicked, you did Wicked with Alicia and Nicole. Did anybody else go? You, Alicia,
it was
Nicole?
Just three of us. Okay. It was the three of us, and we had a blast.
Very nice. All right, so affiliates... Never mind the music. Every single week, they just did a Miley Cyrus song. That's super fun. They did Party in the USA. You've got Radioactive Ramblings talking about the Red Rising series, talking about Arcane, talking about Studio Ghibli movies. All, you know, if you like the Lorehounds, you'll like them. You know, they cover a wide variety of stuff. You've got Wolf Shift Dust doing Silo every single week. Alicia's doing Main Feed or Main Recap. She's doing the Feedback with Luke, and then she's on her Patreon Supercast doing bonus episodes about the spoilers of the books. So she's got plenty of content going on over there. Please don't forget. And if you're
and looking, doesn't she also have something about a book club?
Yes, I believe the book club. I think the book club itself finished. Like they finished the series.
Oh, okay.
But they're kind of reviving that to do like a book versus show thing.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
I don't know if she's calling it book club. I haven't looked at the labeling in a while. But they talk about the books, okay? They just talk about the books.
There you go.
All right.
There you go.
Properly Howard also is currently on season. So you can go listen to them. They're doing their current season on A Few Good Films, which is where they drafted 12 films, that all have to do with A Few Good Men. The actors, the writers, directors, it all has related to somebody.
It's a great concept.
And if you're looking for something fun to do, if you want more Marilyn, you could always go over to Rings and Rituals and go back and listen to all those episodes about Rings of Power Season 1.
It was a lot of fun. And Season 2 will be happening. We just have to figure out between our schedules when is a good time to record them. So
yeah.
Stay tuned.
Oh, and since this is a Star Wars podcast, we got a recent inquiry. Is the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast coming back anytime soon? Alicia's just been really busy with Silo, so I know she's got a lot of plans for the new year.
Yes.
So that feed will be back soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. I have thank yous to say.
Yay.
Thank yous. Thank yous. I do have music. I don't know if it'll be good. Here we go. Our thank yous. Discord server boosters. Ooh. Aaron K.
I like it.
Tiller
like
the Thriller, it. Dork of the Ninjas, Dew 71, Athena A, Tina, Lestew, Nancy M, Ghost of Perdition, and Radioactive Richard, and our lore masters on Supercast and Patreon, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Dew 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestew, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Neil F, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, and Adrian. Thank you, everyone. It is always a pleasure to be able to read these lists because it makes me remember we have a lot of support here. We got a lot of active community, and we had a great year. I'm looking at all the stats. You know, we just did our payouts for our affiliates and co-hosts this year, and we couldn't keep this supported, especially financially, without all of your contributions. And we couldn't keep talking on the mic if you weren't here listening, all listeners. So thank you for being here. Thanks for a great year. We'll see you in the new year with more Star Wars.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, folks. It's been wonderful.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds and connect with us on Twitter at @thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.